You see the heron on the front of the boat, great blue heron on the front. It's a relatively common bird, one of the largest birds you'll ever see around here. We saw some on the canoe trip yesterday. I've seen them out at Hoover when I've been out there. You see them in Allen Creek sometimes. I've been told by a few people that have those backyard ponds, you don't want to see them there if you have the goldfish or the, what are the, koi, is that what they call them, the little Japanese fish? You put those in the, I guess that's like setting the buffet table for a heron. That's what they eat, or fish. Now, I was thinking of herons, I was thinking about herons in preparation of this sermon. Remember, earlier this summer when I saw a heron walking along the shore, and I was walking, the heron was still. In fact, it was so still, nothing was moving on it. And if you've seen a heron, they can do that, right? They just stand in, you know, water, and they've got those long legs, and water might be coming up halfway up their legs, and they are perfectly still. And I stood there and to see how long it would stay still. So I had to stand still because, you know, if I move too much, then it would move away or even fly away. But I stood perfectly still. It was kind of like a stare down between heron and me. Well, the heron won. I finally had to give up and move. And when I moved, it decided to fly off, but perfectly still. Every once in a while, when I've been out in the wild, I've got to see why they stand certainly still, and you probably know, right? They stand perfectly still, so at the proper moment, when some unsuspecting fish comes swimming by, their legs that look like twigs or something, and as quick as lightning, that head flashes down and it grabs the fish, and it has its meal. So there is a real purpose in how they behave with their very still, and if they move, very measured walk through the shallows on the edge of a lake or a stream. As I was watching that heron this summer, I thought about this passage that Linda read from the psalm. Be still before the Lord and wait patiently for him. And I thought, what could be more still than a heron? What could be more patient than a heron waiting for a fish to swim by? Psalm 37 is not one of the more familiar psalms. It's not so much a poem as it is a series of sayings, more like a reading of Proverbs than a psalms. Still, it is one that offers much in understanding about our faith in God. The psalm was written at a time when the people of Israel had been conquered. The nation had been conquered by Babylon, and much of the population had been taken to exile in Babylon. And there they were forced into servitude. And when they were taken away, they were not only uprooted from their land, but they were uprooted from their worship with God. For when they lived in the land of Israel, the center of worship was the temple. When they were taken away in exile, they didn't have that center of worship, and so the people had to recenter. And they were finding it a difficult task to do that because they associated their God with the land that had been promised them. Remember, they lived in the promised land and with his temple where God's house was. And so they lived with that agitation. Where is God? How do I pray to a God here? There. And the psalmist was trying to answer that, trying to address that fear, that anxiety, that uncertainty about where God was. And so the words come out there. Be still before the Lord and wait patiently for him. And when you think about it, it's what many of us struggle with as well, for we reach some rough patch in life, rough patch on the road of life, and we cry out to God to help, and wondering at the same time if God is even listening or is even there. And in this state of anxiety, we pace and we fret and we shake our fists and we shout in anger and we cringe in fear. And whatever is wrong, we want God to make it right. And here comes the psalmist, be still. Wait patiently for the Lord. Be still and wait patiently for the Lord. And we wonder, is that even possible? The passage I read for James puts it in a similar way. Be patient. Only the sad part is our standard translation doesn't really fully give the emphasis that James did in his original Greek that he wrote it in, because it really would be better translated as, you must be still. You must be still, James says. You must be still. You must be patient. Words of James to his audience. Now, I will say, when it comes to patience, I'm no saint. I will tell you right now, I was glad when I moved from Chicago to here, because there are only half as many traffic jams here as there are in Chicago. And yet, we do have sneaky traffic jams, don't we? They sneak up. You go down Cleveland Avenue at 5 o'clock. That's got to be the slowest mile in all of Ohio. And I sit there and I wonder, who are all these people? And why are they in my way? So what is it that gets your impatience meter running? Is it the slow person at the checkout counter in front of you, you know, the chatty guy that chats with everybody that comes through and means you've got to wait longer to get through that line? Is it being put on hold? Hello, can I help you? Let me put you on hold for minutes, hours, days. Feels like it, doesn't it? What is gets your impatience meter going? Right? We are impatient people. And here comes James saying, be patient. You must be patient. In his book, Compassion, Christian author Henry Nouwens says that the beginning point for living the compassionate life is patience. We must learn patience if we are to be compassionate. He writes, patience is the discipline of compassion. Now one points out that the word patience comes from the same root word as compassion. Thus, compassion could be understood as come patience or with patience. Our compassion could be described as having, as living patiently with others. Now one writes, if we ask about the way of the compassionate life, patience is the answer. If we cannot be patient, we cannot become patient. If we ourselves are unable to suffer, we cannot suffer with others. If we lack the strength to carry the burden of our own lives, we cannot accept the burden of our neighbors. This puts patience in a whole other light, doesn't it? When I think of being patient, I usually take a very self-centered view of the situation. And I ask, how might I become less impatient? How can I learn to be more patient? I'll have less stress in my life if I become more patient. I will have less of a stomach ache, less of a backache. I'll be a better person if I can be more patient. I've always thought of patience as a personal virtue, one that primarily affects me and only everyone else indirectly because of my impatience. But now it gives me a new thought. Patience is more than a personal virtue. It is a requirement for Christian living. If I cannot have patience within my own life, if I cannot bear my own burdens with some degree of acceptance and perseverance, how can I bear the burdens of others? Years ago, we had a missionary from Nicaragua visit us and share the story of her ministry to the poor of that country. It seemed to me that every time the people she worked with and the stories she told, every time they took a step up in their social economic standing, something would come and knock them down again. A natural disaster would come, or a government edict, or some sleazy foreign company would come in and do something that would knock them back down. And yet here was this missionary telling us about her newest venture. This was a woman who embodied that of which Nouwen speaks. I bet she knows how to handle the slow line at the checkout counter. But for James, patient does not mean standing idly by with your hands in your pockets and doing nothing. If you listen to the words that he compares, patience needed by the Christian as patience that a farmer has, patience that is active in making something happen. The word that James uses that we translate as patience literally means long-tempered. Now, you've heard of people being short-tempered, right? Somebody who's short-tempered gets angry easily, but James wants us to be long-tempered, or someone who does not get angry easily. And how long? James tells us to be patient until the coming of the Lord, which, as we know, could be a while. And James uses the example of that farmer to say, here's what waiting patiently is all about. For the farmer does not just sit there and wait for the crops to grow. Now, some farmers, like Frog, may sing to them or read poetry to their crops, but more likely they're checking their equipment, sharpening the blades, making sure the building storage bins, hiring help, getting ready for when that moment when the crop is ready to be grown. But the patient cannot control the harvesting of the crop. The farmer must wait until it's ready. And yet in that waiting, there are things the farmer does to get ready. See, patience, more than anything, is about time. It's about letting us work within time instead of constantly trying to fight time. When we are impatient, we let the clock control our lives and our expectations. Things have to happen quicker. They have to happen on our time scale. But when we let the clock dominate our lives, we lose the ability to be with people, to be with the situation. We lose, as Nouwen would put it, calm patience. We lose compassion. Years ago, I visited a woman in a nursing home. The woman was old and infirm. Her mind was gone. She needed help eating. Each day, her daughter would come and take her lunch hour from work and come over to that nursing home and feed her mother lunch. When I went to visit her during that lunchtime, I was amazed and inspired by how lovingly she fed her mother. I admired the patience she had with her mother, each spoonful seemingly to take forever. And as I sat there, I wondered if the younger woman was ever late getting back to work because it took so long for her mother to eat. And so I asked her about that, and she told me that she always got back to work on time. No matter how slow her mother ate, she always finished in time for her to go back to work. And yet she said, and this is what struck me, for that hour that she spent at the nursing home, time stood still. Patience while waiting is what allows us to see, feel, connect with others. And maybe especially with those fellow sufferers in the journey of life. Patience allows us not so much to worry about our own timetable, but in our delay to see what was happening with others. Maybe the woman in line ahead of us has too many packages. Maybe the dad is trying to keep an active child quiet while he waits. Patience allows us to see this and others, to see the needs of people around us, and to offer to hold another's packages or to make silly faces at a little kid. When we are impatient, we miss those opportunities. Might be worth trying this week to try to be a little more patient with others, with life, with yourself, with God. It also might be good to remember that we can be very thankful. God is very patient with us. Amen.